courage. Truth.
There is nothing permanent except change. It's a force that can't be stopped. Status quo people, status quo businesses are going to be left in the dust. Some businesses are going to get this. Some businesses are going to lead the way. Others are going to fall by the wayside because they don't get it, or they're resistant, or they think that it's not going to be as big as everybody thinks it is. There was a story in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. The department store Nordstrom's is opening up a new store called Nordstrom Local. It's an experiment. It's kind of a hybrid between online retail and the traditional department store. Now, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. I grew up in the Seattle area. Nordstrom's was the store. They've done it right for, I don't even know, 100 years. Nordstrom Local is going to be much smaller. They're going to have personal style consultants, a meeting area with a bar, areas to try on merchandise, curbside pickup for online purchases. The one thing they're not going to carry? Clothes. Wait, isn't Nordstrom's a clothing store? Here's the thing. Nordstrom realizes that the malls are dying. People like to shop online. But that doesn't mean that shopping in person is dead. Nordstrom's is going to try something different. They want to give people what they want: personal service, speed, convenience. I read an article yesterday that said, you know, it may not work. It's a total gamble. But they know that what they're currently doing is not the future. They know that they have to try something because a department store is a thing of the past. And if you don't believe me, ask Sears or JCPenney. The reason why I bring this up is it's not just stores. The status quo is not working. It's not working for the TV networks. It's not working for the movie business. It's not going to be working for trucking. It's not going to be working for schools. It's already not working. And the more we try to hold on to the university system, the worse our pain is going to get. The old models are being turned upside down. It's not working in Washington. It's not Barack Obama's fault, and it's not Donald Trump's fault. The world is changing. The D.C. swamp that President Trump wants to drain is much more of a tar pit. Republicans and Democrats are content right now with where they are, who they are, because they don't think they have to change. But in a free market system, you do have to change. You have a problem with the status quo when Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham are your party's flag bearers. Yesterday, I was reading that Lindsey Graham is now leading the charge on change. Lindsey Graham? This is status quo thinking. That is part of the reason Donald Trump became president. But soon, the political version of Nordstrom's Local will appear. I don't know where, but it is not necessarily going to be shiny, but it is going to be innovative. And a lot of people will like it. When you have Schumer and Lindsey Graham being flag bearers, they are not flag bearers. Those are pall bearers. When something new does appear, if it is truly from the free market, it will be better. Because when it's truly from the people, when it is ground up, it will be anchored in America's founding principles, because we know those principles actually work.
It's Tuesday, September 12th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It was on 9/12 that John F. Kennedy said, "We choose to go to the moon and do those other things." Not because they're easy, but because they are hard. This is the America that we have always known. Oh, I don't know what it is about this date, 9/12, but it's 9/12. And there is something about this date that stirs America into action. It was the day after 9/11 that things changed, at least for me. On 9/11, I was scared and freaked out of my mind. On 9/12, I began to think there's hope. And I began to think that because of the people that just rose up. The average person in America that had nothing to do with politics or companies or anything else. Just my neighbors gave me hope. The same thing that we're seeing now in Houston. And the same things that we're seeing in Florida. Yesterday, I was on my way home and I heard a piece of audio. Somebody sent this to me. And it is the Hymn to the Innocent. And it's done by a high school philharmonic. These kids that are playing in this philharmonic and this choir, none of them were born on 9/11. None of them were alive. The only America that these kids know is the America that has guards at the airport. The America that is at war. Been at war their whole life. When you and I were wondering whether America was going to survive, every member of this Philharmonic was not alive. And look at what they're creating. As you wonder about the next generation, as you wonder about even our school system, here is an amazing school called the American Heritage School. That honestly, if I didn't own movie studios in Texas, I would move my family so my kids could go to school there. Yesterday, as I was driving home and I was listening to this, I thought back on a conversation I had with a coworker. He was in eighth grade when the towers came down. He said, I feel different today. He said, I kind of feel bad. It's weird. He said, this is the first year that it feels like that happened a long time ago. And I kind of feel the same way. It feels like it happened a long time ago. Why? Last year it didn't feel like that. The year before it didn't feel like that. What's changed? May I suggest that one thing has changed? The fundamental transformation of America. During the Barack Obama administration, he said, we're just 3 days away from the fundamental transformation of America. And nobody heard it. We did. Those of us on the right, we heard it. The left dismissed it. But we heard it. And we thought, boy, you restore something of value. You don't go in and look at the Mona Lisa and say, you know, I'm going to have a fundamental transformation of that Mona Lisa thing. You look at the Mona Lisa and say, is there a way to restore this? Is there a way to bring it back to its original vibrance? We knew it was changing. The left caught up with that during the last election and said, what's going on? How can this be? Hillary Clinton is still saying, how could this be? And I told you this summer that we were at the end of the beginning, and we now were at the beginning of the middle. That the fundamental transformation of America has happened. But it is only in our systems. As I said a minute ago, business is changing. Television news is changing. Politics is changing. What we would have never accepted before, ever, we now embrace. We don't tolerate. We embrace it. Policies, principles, culture, business, finances, everything is new and unstable. Except for one thing. We haven't been fundamentally transformed yet. They're still working on that. And when I say they, I don't mean some, you know, star chamber, deep dark secrets. I mean, what we're going through right now, the collective, it hasn't changed us yet. There still is that 9-12 person inside each of us.
I'm on Glenn's Facebook page. You can listen to this. It's Hymn to the Innocent by an a high school philharmonic.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Amazing. At the American Heritage School. You can look at it on Glenn's Facebook page. It's the post where she mentions Furtwängler. That's how you can find it. Just search for the word Furtwängler on his Facebook page.
Normal people doing amazing things. That's really what America is all about. Normal people doing amazing things. There is one story about 9/11 that I have only heard in bits and pieces, but there's a new documentary out, The Untold Tale of the 9/11 Resilience. Here's a clip.
They show me, you know, when the American people need to come together and pull together, they will do it.
I do feel a way honored that I was a part of it.
It was the greatest thing I ever did with my life.
The greatest day that I've ever seen in all my boating, I mean, my life on the water.
I believe somebody has a little hero in them. You gotta look in, and it's in there. It'll come out, if need to be.
I have one theory in life. I never want to say the word I should have. If I do it and I fail, I tried. If I do it and I succeed, better for me. And I tell my children the same thing. Never go through life saying you should have. If you want to do something, you do it.
This is an amazing documentary because that, what he just said, is the American spirit. If that is ever snuffed, then we are done. But never say, I should have. Do it. If you fail, you fail. But almost everything in our society, at least from the old system, is trying to stop us from doing that. Stop you from thinking that you have the power to change politics. Stop you from thinking that you could pull away from the Democrats or the Republicans. Stop you from believing that you have an idea that is worth something so you can start your own business. You can just go out on your own. Although technology and the way the world is moving is telling you a different story. And it is a story that is... it is the story of the West. We're not a collective. We are individuals. And in our greatest hours, we don't come together and as a collective because we've been told. We come together as individuals, privately. And then what we do is multiplied by all these other people who have the same drive, the same feeling. It is the Adam Smith invisible hand. And that invisible hand was evident on 9/11. So many miraculous things happened. But the one we don't know is how the actual U.S. Navy behaved. And I don't mean the one that have the big gray ships. I mean the citizens' Navy, the citizens' brigade. It wasn't the ferries that brought everybody across the water on 9/11. They were citizens. Here's Tom Hanks.
The great boat lift of 9/11 became the largest sea evacuation in history. Larger than the evacuation of Dunkirk in World War II, where 339,000 British and French soldiers were rescued over the course of 9 days. On 9/11, nearly 500,000 civilians were rescued from Manhattan by boat. It took less than 9 hours.
It's an amazing story, well worth your 12 minutes on YouTube today. It's called Boat Lift, An Untold Tale of 9/11 Resilience. It's narrated by Tom Hanks and put out by the Center for National Policy. We just tweeted it from @worldofstew. You can link to it there.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
It's amazing that that happened on 9/12 and I didn't know it. 9/12 is such an important date in my life. And I think the country's. And here is John F. Kennedy saying, we're going to go to the moon at Rice University. And he said that on September 12th, 9/12. The day to me that we had a moonshot ourselves. We chose to come together and to do the hard things. Now, we have gotten lost. Quite honestly, we didn't. I don't think we ever made it. We may have made it to the moon, but I don't think we ever made it back. I think we got a few people trapped on the moon right now when it comes to our moonshot of this decade, as he said.
I'm afraid tragedy is just a drug at this point. Like, these things happen, and they give you that feeling for a while, and man, it seems to go away.
You know what is a drug?
Get worse.
You know what is a drug? USA, USA, USA. That was the drug, because that's not a solution. That's not a solution, just like it wasn't when George Bush said, you know what, you got to do your part, go shopping. That's not a solution. Those two things, nationalism, shopping, and everything else, those are drugs. But there are things that we can do that are not drugs, that actually change things. More next.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I remember the day my life changed. The day my life changed happened in a cafeteria at Yale University. And the guy sitting across the table was Wayne Meeks. He doesn't even know this, but he changed my life. He changed the course of my life. I was 30 years old. I was early in the recovery of my alcoholism. The day I started school literally was the day I asked for a divorce. And I was just searching. I had been searching for answers. And I had gotten into Yale University, and I couldn't believe it, because when I sent for my transcripts, I thought I was like a C or D student. And I wasn't. I was a straight A student. And that's not that wasn't my memory at all. My memory had so decayed and I had been so down on myself over the years that I really had convinced myself that I was pretty stupid and always had been. And so when I put my transcripts together and I you know, put my package together and sent it in for special student status at Yale, I really didn't expect to get in. Then when I did get in, oof, I was like, I don't think I can do this. And my professor said to me one day, he said, Mr. Beck, after I had questioned him on something, he said, can I see you after class? I said, yes, sir. After class, he said, come have lunch with me. So we sat in this cafeteria, this Ivy League, hallowed halls, oak paneled room. And he said, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm just looking for answers. I have never spent any time in my life trying to figure things out. And I realize that I don't know anything. And I'm really looking for answers. And he said, what are you reading? And I told him. And he said, who's guiding you through that? And I said, either Mr. Barnes or Mr. Noble. I'm not sure which, but that's, I'm just going into the bookstore. And I'm looking for people who disagree with each other. And I'm comparing and contrasting. He said, you're doing that on your own? I said, yes. And I'm so confused. I don't even know. I just... He reached across the table as I was in the middle of that. My hand was down on the cafeteria table. And he reached over and he put his hand on top of mine. And he said, listen to me. You know you belong here, right? You know you're smart enough to be here. I think I answered yes, but the answer in my head was no. Him saying that to me gave me the confidence to know it's going to be okay. Sometimes one conversation can change the course of so much. There was a caller to this program. He didn't know me. We had never met. I'd never talked to him before. He had never talked to me. And yet his phone call changed the course of my life. He called in to tell me what he believed. And what he believed was that we were all alone.
The problem is today, and I believe this, I believe that we're outnumbered now. I don't believe...
We're not. We're
I
not.
Know you say that, and I knew we're you were going to get mad
Damn
at me.
It.
I knew
Ed,
it.
We're not outnumbered. We are not outnumbered.
You look at
you know
the
what?
Polls,
I gotta, you know what?
Every...
I am, look, here's right. The thing. Ed, you give me a month to prove this. I am going to find a way to prove this to you. I you know what, Stu? I'm going to give you, Ed, you hang on the phone. I want to get a phone number from you.
Yep.
Okay? Thank you for calling. And Ed, you are probably the most important caller that I have ever received in my career.
Glenn, please remember the first sentence I said when I called on the phone.
I understand, I appreciate, Ed, that I just appreciate it. And you may be the most important person in my life because you may have changed and finally given me the impetus to actually find the way to prove it to you.
9/11 caused so much heartbreak in America, but it didn't harden our hearts. When the wreckage settled after 9/11, Americans everywhere united. We didn't even know what to do. But we knew what we had was worth fighting for. But we weren't given any real specific direction except go shopping. I still believe in who we are at our core. We are the people that we were on 9/12. We are the people of Hurricane Harvey. People who are thirsty. They are thirsty to be involved to help their fellow man. So Ed calls me, and he did change the course of my life. I knew who we were, and it was that call that gave birth to the 9/12 Project. It was a grassroots initiative that spread like wildfire. We had 6 months before 9/12. We had a watch party, if you will. I asked everybody, watch at 5 o'clock, and people gathered all over the country. Do you remember watching it together?
No matter where you are, from our studio audience here in Midtown Manhattan, to the sidewalks outside, to the people all over the country, just a few blocks away in Times Square, where there are people viewing parties. They're holding regular viewing parties, started with people and by people, just regular people like you, like Joyce in Melbourne, Florida, whose party grew so large that she moved it from her restaurant to the parking lot outside. To the gatherings in Noah's in South Jordan, Utah. To homes in Golden Valley, Arizona and Brewer, Maine. To the garage bar in Columbus, Ohio. And virtually every small town and big city in between in this great nation. There are people gathering in ranches in Texas, where some familiar faces have gathered to watch the show. To military bases in Iraq, where real heroes have gathered.
I don't think I've seen those images until just now, since that day. Amazing people who were not just watching a television show. They came together because they believed in a few things. The 9 principles and the 12 values. That America is good. That there is a God. That we have to try to be more honest than we were yesterday. That our families are sacred. And my spouse and my family, we are the ultimate authority, not the government. And if you break the law, you have to pay the penalty. And justice is blind and no one is above that. That I do have a God-given right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But there's no guarantee of equal results. And I've worked hard for what I have. And I will share it with who I want to. And the government can't force me to be charitable. And it's not un-American for me to disagree with authority or share my personal opinion. And the government works for me. I don't answer to them. They answer to me. Those were the principles. They're still true today. The values of honesty and reverence and hope and thrift and humility and charity, sincerity, moderation, hard work, courage, personal responsibility, and gratitude. It might sound like a big ask to a lot of people just to live those things, but people rise to the level of their preparedness and their knowledge. They don't rise to the level of their expectations. The reason why people today are rising up to help the people in the flood and they're just giving everything is because that's how they were raised and prepared by parents. I just wanted to prove that to Ed and to myself, that there was a majority of Americans that care enough about their country to do their homework. Television is a great medium. It's like anything in the free market. It can be used for good or can be used for evil. A lot of people think I used it for evil. I tried so hard to use it for good. But television can be really isolating. And on August 28th, 2010, I invited everybody to join me on the mall in Washington, D.C. I really had no expectation. I had no idea how many people would show up. We didn't have unions and organizers all over the country that were bringing people in. It was just up to you and your local church or whatever you wanted to do. And to my shock, 500,000 people showed up in Washington, D.C.
This day is a day that we can start the heart of America again. And it has nothing to do with politics. It has everything to do with God. Everything, turning our face back to the values and the principles that made us great.
But this was not just an American thing. And it wasn't just about honor. What was coming required us to also have courage. And so the next year, when we were starting a network, our very first internet broadcast was international. quite a feat. It was from Israel, which we thought might turn into a war zone just because of the things we had to say there.
I ask you to turn your eyes to Israel and restore courage. I have been asked by the press over and over again, what is it you think you can teach Israel about courage? My answer is simple. Nothing. They asked me then, so then why would you come to Israel? Because I say, in Israel, you see courage.
Americans are resilient, but only if we're prepared. We're made from tough stock, man. Really tough. We crossed the oceans to get here. We were broke. We were penniless. We crossed the mountains with oxen. 2012, we had gone through a lot. 11 years of labor. And there was one more piece to put together if we were going to make it. It was honor, courage, but most importantly, it was love. From the heart of Texas, it was time to remind everybody and those unbreakable values and principles of the 912 Project from Cowboy Stadium.
There are two kinds of Americans, and they're not Democrats and Republicans. They're not God-fearing and God-doubting. They're not black and white. They're bigger than that. Much bigger. There are two kinds of Americans. Those who like to be pushed, and those who push themselves. Those who see our problems and refuse to see our blessings.
Close your eyes for a second and just imagine that we are in an oak-paneled room. And that you were saying to me the same thing that you probably said to your wife or husband last night or in the last 24 hours. I don't know. I don't have any. I don't know. I don't know how we're going to make it. I don't know. Let me reach across and put my hand on top of yours and say, you know you belong here, right? You know you're in the right place. Even if you don't believe it yet yourself, believe me, you're going to make it. That's a strange, very strange show. It's a strange day. We have Max Lucado in the wings. He's going to be with us in just a second on how to survive chaos in the world. And strangely, we seem to have Hillary Clinton with it. And I don't know if it's the lighting or what it is, but she looks better here on TV and radio than she normally does.
Thank you, Glenn.
it's her book has been released, and we have the video excerpts of her book. And we're going to share that coming up real soon as well.
Glenn Beck.
Oh, thank you.